Well, good afternoon, everybody. Stan Turner here. Having fun over there, aren't they? Yes, indeed, they are at Rutherford Elementary School with the Stillwater Home and Garden Show. Yes, it's winter outside, but it's spring inside there. It's spring inside here, too. Thank you so much for your company on this chilly, chilly, chilly sub-zero Saturday. Always nice to have your company. We always strive to give you something fun, interesting, educational, and yes, entertaining. Perhaps, folks, as we kick off the show here, there's a box. Maybe you have a box or an old suitcase, whatever, stowed away in the attic or basement or garage, maybe even under your bed at home. In that box are items you've either, maybe you forgot about them or cannot bear to throw away. Should you open that box, your childhood is staring you in the face and the genie is out of the bottle. These are the toys your small little hands played with way back when. Another time, maybe another place, but the years between then and now, they just vanish, and you can see and remember it all once again. Fascinating it is how toys, these long-forgotten treasures, can reawaken special memories and tell us about the times in which we grew up. Well, there's a big and very special reawakening coming this spring at the Minnesota History Center in St. Paul. It's a brand new exhibit called Toys of the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And even if you tossed your playthings long ago, this exhibit will once again bring you face to face with them. In studio with us this noon hour are two History Center folks who have helped put it all together. Kate Roberts is Senior Exhibit Developer at the Historical Society, and Adam Scherer is Senior Curator and Exhibit Collections Rep. Folks, welcome to the studios here, KLBB. Good of you to come down on this beautiful winter day. Thank you. You stayed upright. Didn't slip too much, did you?
We certainly did. So far, so good.
Kate, thanks for coming. Adam, welcome, and thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having us, Dan.
Before we plunge into this wonderful exhibit, and this is going to be a bonanza for the History Center. I can't wait to see this thing. It's down the road a piece. It's opening in May. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah, it opens Memorial Day weekend.
All right. Before we jump into it, let's go, Kate. What's in your forgotten toy, maybe not so forgotten toy box under your bed right now? What are some of the play? Have you kept some playthings from a long ago?
Well, interestingly enough, I have. Yeah. Probably the one that I still love, that I will still play with till the day I die, is the Spirograph. Okay. So if people remember that toy, that's absolutely my favorite.
All right. That's on the do not throw list at your house, right? Adam, what about you?
Well, I don't still have it, but my favorite toy of this period was G.I. Joe.
Oh, yeah. Sure, sure. I think G.I. is still around, isn't he, huh?
He is. Yep, he looks a little bit different than he did in 1964.
Kitted out, just quite a bit different. But, you know, in one way or another, we all cling to things that bring it back to us. Because childhood, well, it's a very special time in our lives. And these artifacts, I guess artifacts now, you see them in antique stores, don't you? Huh? You do, with big prices on them, huh? Yeah. Adam,
they're actually quite collectible. It's amazing how much some of these go for. And we actually, we did a lot of purchasing for this exhibition. We had quite a bit in our collection, but we actually did purchase quite a bit. And it was amazing to see just what some of these toys go for.
What sort of things did you purchase?
Well, you know, the exhibit really runs the gamut, as you said, from the 50s through the 70s. Yeah. And so we were collecting everything from Davy Crockett coonskin caps to hula hoops to Barbie dolls to Tonka trucks to G.I. Joes. Mm-hmm. And so it's a really diverse collection in terms of the material that we're going to have on exhibit.
Sure. Kate, I'm glad you guys had a budget for buying some of these artifacts, because it's nice to fill out the collection. I know you have a big collection, but you need to add to it.
Well, the other thing that was kind of nice to have that budget, too, was we also did a big storytelling campaign. We went online and asked people to tell their stories, share memories of favorite toys. So for people, people would tell us a great story. If we didn't have that toy, we had the luxury of going out and getting it to support the story. So that's what's great about the exhibit, I think, is that it really interweaves people's memories with the stuff.
Wonderful, wonderful. Now, the exhibit prohibition about that time, way long time ago, when you were not supposed to be making hooch and that sort of thing, that's in its last days now at the History Center, isn't it?
That closes March 16th.
Okay.
So we've got a little, I hope, warm weather coming, and I hope you can make it to the History Center and up the walk. without slipping.
And then in come May, we're going to open the toy box, the old toy box. And I want to ask Kyle over here. Kyle is with us on the board today, helping run the show here technically. You are a child of the 90s, Kyle. Is that right?
I am indeed.
Okay. What the toys you played with?
I think one of the main ones was like the little Hot Wheels cars and Legos.
Legos?
I still play with Legos, actually.
Okay, that's good. You're a budding architect as well as a broadcaster, maybe, huh?
I don't know about that. It's usually just kind of just wrecks of whatever.
Yeah, okay. Anything else that, you remember from your childhood in the way of toys?
I think those were the two main ones.
All right. Let's have Tom Shoedrop into the microphone here. Tom grew up in the 1980s. And again, the exhibit at the History Center will cover 50s, 60s, 70s toys. But we still want to give a little time to the 80s. And Tom, what were the goodies you played with as a kid?
Oh, boy. I definitely was a fan of the He-Man action figures, the World Wrestling Federation action figures. let's see, Candyland. I still love Tinker Toys.
Yeah?
I built monuments with Tinker Toys.
Taj Mahal.
Absolutely. And I think those have been around for a very long time.
Yeah, how far back to the Tinker
Creepy Toys? Crawlers, too.
Creepy Crawlers, huh?
Oh, Creepy Crawlers. That's a wonderful memory. Yeah, and you're right. A lot of these things that you're talking about go back decades. The Creepy Crawlers, I think, came out in the 60s. But
sure.
Tinker Toys, we're talking turn of the century.
Wow, really?
No, sure.
Really?
And you know, they're really hard to find now.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know why.
Well, that's a good question, because we played them, because we keep them, because we're still playing with them.
Or they get thrown out. They get tossed in the dumpster.
I'm afraid that's where all mine probably ended up.
Do you still have any left?
I was able to find at a Barnes & Noble one box of Tinker Toys for my nephew. I didn't want him to grow up not having a clue what those were. But that's the only place I could find them.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I think this is what I would thank you, Tom, for. This is a bottom line kind of exhibit, the common denominator, because everybody played with toys of one kind or another. As a kid, I made some. My parents couldn't afford a lot of things I wanted, so I just manufactured them. Took pieces of cardboard and metal my dad had in his little workshop, and it was fun. It was okay. To me, Adam and Kate, it was kind of the theater of the mind, letting your imagination run free. And that was a good exercise in itself, Adam.
And that was something that we really wanted to focus on in the exhibit, was the ability for a lot of these toys to harness your imagination. Sometimes these toys were actually more successful as playthings if they weren't so elaborate. We found that a lot of toys, like, for example, the little people, as they're known in the 1970s, that were made by Fisher-Price, these are very, very simple toys. I mean, they came out in the 1950s originally. They were nothing more than wooden dowels that had, paper bodies wrapped over them. They were very simple, but they really did spark your imagination, and they were incredibly popular.
This reminds me of the old story that kids are given elaborate gifts and they unpackage them at a holiday or whatever, and they play more with the carton in which the gift came, the cardboard box, than they do with the whatever was inside of it. Right, Kate?
That is so true. We have, I mentioned earlier that we had put out a call for stories, and I want to just read a short one for you. It's just wonderful, from a woman who grew up in St. Paul, who says, "We had toys. We got toys for Christmas. But one of our favorite games was played with none of them. We played town in our basement with a half dozen or more kids from our family. We had a town store called Most's after the nearby grocer. Most sold eggs in empty egg cartons, butter, empty butter cartons, and canned goods and homemade pickled food. We had a school, a restaurant, and a saloon with empty grain belt bottles and a bottle of Canadian Club." I just love that.
That's theater of the mind. That's creativity.
Isn't it? Yeah.
That's imagination. Maybe in your exhibit you might think of putting an empty cardboard box, Adam, out there, huh?
We hadn't thought about that. That could be an interesting interaction.
It could. In fact, I've had guests on the show hearkening back when they grew up in the 40s and 30s saying that they would take cardboard boxes and use them as slides on the hill this time of year. That was a toy. That was fun.
I think we all did that. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. You watch for the new refrigerator in the neighborhood or whatever, and there's your giant sled. Yep.
So maybe simpler is better. This is so much fun. What was the germ of the idea for this exhibit? I think it's wonderful.
Well, I think you might remember a couple of years ago, we had an exhibit on 1968.
Oh, very much so, yes.
Yes,
I remember.
very popular exhibit. It's a national traveling exhibit now. And we wanted to revisit that era, but maybe in a little broader way. And we definitely wanted to think about, well, what is the cultural forces in the 60s and beyond, and how can we do that through a single thread? And the one that we hit on was toys. Mm-hmm. We of course broadened it out a little bit too by going to the 50s and going to the 70s, because we really want to reach a broad boomer audience.
Right.
And we want to make sure that there's something there for the grandchildren, the children. Right. So it's a kind of exhibit that I think will appeal to a very broad swath. But that's where the idea came
What's
from.
What's the takeaway here? Hang on to your toys, I think. It really, you know, of course it can be an investment, but I think it's the emotional investment that's most important. Adam?
I think one of the real important takeaway messages is the importance of memory and personal memory.
Yes.
You know, what we try to do in all of our exhibits is make these stories as personal as possible so that people can connect with them, so that history isn't abstract. It isn't something that you read in a textbook. It really is about real people and real experiences.
Beautifully said. I'm a big believer in storytelling, and you know, on this show and others we do here, it's all about storytelling. It's about recounting those special things and moments in our lives, many of which have a common denominator. We all can share that something like this happened in our lives, too. And when you have a tangible object, as I said, you opening up the old toy box out there in the garage, suddenly it does come back to you, doesn't it? You can almost smell the 1950s or 60s or 70s, and it's a wonderful kind of thing, Kate.
Yeah, you completely can, and I think, you know, you've hit on it. You put an object in front of someone, and it sparks a conversation. It sparks a memory. It sparks sharing across generations. And it's just, it's magical what happens. You talk about the smell. I can't tell you how many people have looked at the thing maker that we have and said, I remember what that smell like. I remember that hot smell.
Yeah.
And almost more so than what came out of it, what you created, the creepy crawlers and the incredible edibles. It's that real visceral memory.
And how about those chemistry sets from the 1950s, where little Johnny took the chemist downstairs in the basement on Christmas afternoon? There might have been a mini little explosion. Nobody got hurt, but it just scared everybody. You can smell that, too.
We'll have a couple of chemistry sets in the exhibit.
This is fun. Kate Roberts and Adam Scherer from the Minnesota History Center talking about a forthcoming and very fun learning experience, an exhibit called Toys of the 50s, 60s, and 70s. We're going to walk you through some of the toys of those decades, maybe talk about some toys before those decades and after. We've already done that kind of already, but let's, if I can get the silly putty out of my hair here right now for a minute, we're going to take a break, come right back with these fun folks, and be talking toys. We'll be right back. To really experience a book, meet the author. I'm Stan Turner for Valley Bookseller in downtown Stillwater. Every month, Valley Bookseller's calendar is loaded with events featuring both local and national authors. Visit valleybookseller.com and click the events calendar for a complete list. Choose from monthly events like the Totally Criminal Cocktail Hour or special presentations with authors on tour. Meet your favorite author at Valley Bookseller. Great books, great people. 217 North Main in Stillwater.
At Hymie's Haberdashery, men never sacrifice fashion for weather. So no matter how cold it gets, you can still spot a Hymie's man by his impeccable taste and the confidence that only comes from a hot lather shave. Hymie's Haberdashery helps men look and feel their best with high-quality clothing cut and styled just for them. Create a look that's uniquely yours with tailored suits, overcoats, hats, and accessories that make winter blush and at prices that won't melt your wallet. Hymie's Haberdashery, 400 St. Peter Street in downtown St. Paul. Online at Hymies.com.
Find out why more people come here to River Valley Ford.
Here at River Valley Ford in Baldwin, we believe that having a big selection of vehicles on hand saves our customers time and money. Our lot is filled with the freshest vehicle lineup in the automotive industry, and we want the opportunity to earn your business. Whether you want your next vehicle with just the basics or all the options, you'll find it here. Shop, compare, and find out why so many of your friends and neighbors choose River Valley Ford in Baldwin.
The award-winning vocal group Manhattan Transfer has been performing since the early 70s. Several Grammys and a few decades later, this group has not slowed down. Arguably one of the most notable vocal jazz ensembles, the Manhattan Transfer wanted to push the envelope of what four-part harmonies can do, and they certainly have succeeded. The Manhattan Transfer will be at the Dakota Club in Minneapolis, 7 and 9 p.m. on Monday and 7 and 9 p.m. on Tuesday. Tickets are still available, so call the box office at 612-332-5299 or go online to DakotaCooks.com.
Yep. We are at the Home and Garden Show, the Stillwater Home and Garden Show at Rutherford Elementary School. People have been dropping by. Now they're heading out for lunch. We have refreshments out here at the Home and Garden Show, and we have dozens and dozens of different types of businesses represented here at the Home and Garden Show. We are here until 3 o'clock this afternoon at Rutherford Elementary School. There is free admission with a donation of a non-perishable food item to Valley Outreach, or it's $3 at the door. A day of helpful seminars, one just beginning pretty soon at 12:30 here. It's called Backyard Bartending. I'm thinking of going over and seeing it because it's one of the exhibits that they are having here today. You can play chess with the Mathnasium people who are here. We have drawings. We have prizes to give away. Activities for the kids as well. The Stillwater Area Home and Garden Show brought to you by the Stillwater Area Chamber of Commerce. It's at Rutherford Elementary School until 3 o'clock this afternoon. Free admission with a non-perishable food item, or donated to Valley Outreach, or $3 at the door. And KLBB is giving away a trip for two to Laughlin, Nevada from Riverside Resort and Casino. You have to come here. You have to drop in a registration slip, and we will, we might be sending you to Laughlin, Nevada. We'll be having our drawing on Monday. You can also pick up a window cling here at our KLBB booth, so we hope you'll come by and see us. The Stillwater Home and Garden Show. It runs until 3 o'clock this afternoon. Free admission with a donation of a non-perishable food item to Valley Outreach, or also it's $3 at the door. We'll be back with more from the Stillwater Home and Garden Show. We're glad you could join us. Stop by the booth for Club 1220 KLBB.
All right, Jeffrey, sounds like you're having good, clean fun out there, and we're having the same thing right here at the KLBB studios. We have Kate Roberts and Adam Scher with us from the Minnesota History Center. We're talking about their forthcoming exhibit called Toys. Toys of the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Gumby, Barbie, Slinky, and more. And we're having a blast here. Again, thanks, Kate, and thank you, Adam, for being here. Oh, reliving our childhood today. This is great. I think, what's the old line? Aging is mandatory, but growing up is optional. You know? I think we want to stay there in our adolescence. Tom Osmond is with us here. Tom, of course, does the Flashback Twin Cities show following this one on Saturdays. And, Tom, you were a child once, weren't you?
I never grew up. I'm not sure what you're talking about.
Well, Tom, you were a child. Your toy land period was what, late 70s, early 80s?
About that. Gives my age away a little bit.
That's okay. We're proud to give your age away. Do you still have some of the things you played with?
As much as I could say from the Goodwill box.
What were your favorite toys?
You know, I was listening to Tom talk about He-Man. He-Man was a very prominent part of my toy chest. Also, Star Wars action figures. That was a must every Christmas of what new Star Wars figures came out.
Okay. What was He-Man? What was that all about?
He-Man was the most powerful man in the universe.
Oh, yeah.
He was a...
kind of like me.
Exactly.
Yeah, thank you.
Molded after you, Stan.
Thank you. I thought so.
A large plastic figure, and he did... You twisted him, and he would punch, and he would, take a sword and take out enemies. And he had a cartoon show which sold more toys to us unsuspecting youths.
Aha. Okay, Tom Osmond, thank you so much. Appreciate the memories there. Tom hit on something, and I wanted to ask you about Kate and Adam. And it seems to me a lot of the toys were basically promotional vehicles for TV shows and movies, weren't they? I mean, they became great toys, but they were, as I say, promotional vehicles to sell something on the screen.
Hmm? Absolutely. Yeah. I think that when TV came in the mid-50s, the landscape changed for toys. Mm-hmm. Marketing directly to kids became more and more common and expected. The level of toys and the number of toys associated with TV, movies, comic books, everything. You're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. TV changes everything.
Yeah, it does. Adam?
And Star Wars was really the first movie to be thoroughly merchandised. You know, it's a very interesting story that George Lucas, the director and the creator of Star Wars, won from 20th Century Fox, the studio that made the film, the merchandising rights, because 20th Century Fox didn't think this movie was going to amount to anything.
The geniuses of 20th Century.
And as a matter of fact, the toy company, Mego Corporation, that was originally going to produce the Star Wars figures, also passed on the opportunity to manufacture these toys because, again, nobody thought this movie was going to be a success at all. So both of those, both 20th Century Fox and Mego were eating their words within a matter of months.
Why do I think some executives were probably looking for work?
Exactly.
Exactly right.
And then things get even better, right? Because then Kenner, who does win the contract, can't keep up with the demand.
Right. The movie premieres in May of 1977. Everybody is caught off guard by how successful this film is. So by the time Christmas time comes around, there are no toys available. There are no figures available. So they actually had to give kids a voucher for the first four figures.
Look at mommy, a voucher under the tree.
That were to be produced. And they didn't get them till early in 1978.
Oh, I never knew this. This is fantastic.
Yeah, and we actually have, again, in the exhibit and in the book, we have a photo of a young man, William Becker, proudly holding up on Christmas his early bird gift certificate in lieu of the toys.
All I want for Christmas is my two front teeth and a voucher.
A voucher.
This is amazing. The exhibit coming soon to the Minnesota History Center, Toys of the 50s, 60s, and 70s. You already know you're going to want to be there to see this. Of course, there were lots of toys well before the 1950s. Kate and Adam, the 1940s, for example, if we want to start there. World War II is raging. The U.S. gets into it in December of 1941 and through 45. But still, even though the factories were given over to war work, some toys were sneaking through and into the hands of kids.
Well, that's true. And correct me if I'm wrong, Adam, but I think wartime restrictions were such that wooden toys could still be made. Wood was
right.
Not. Yeah.
Right. Wood was not restricted. So
Tinker toys,
Lincoln Logs, other toys that were made out of wood were the only toys that didn't have any restrictions on their manufacture.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And some of the toys that we know better in plastic form today were made in mm-hmm. the 40s as
okay.
wooden toys.
So other toys from the 40s we could point at, just to jog our memories a little
well,
bit.
Well, think about any sort of train.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Think about the very early electric football. Mm-hmm. And how about Slinky, which actually...
Was that a 40s toy?
Well, it was, okay. Interestingly right. enough. It came about as a result of some World War II experimentation.
Ah, right.
Yeah.
A spinoff
yeah.
then from
yes, exactly.
War work. Okay.
So in terms of the fad, that comes a little bit later, but Slinky right. was actually born as a wartime development.
And there had to be a lot of dolls for the girls in the 30s, the 20s, 30s, 40s, I would guess, too.
Raggedy Ann and Andy are probably the eternal favorite. They're still there today, but yes, the beginning of the dolls that really come into prominence in the 50s are happening in the 40s. You go back a little bit earlier, people might remember in the 30s and 40s, paper dolls being so big and so important. Think about the Depression. And again, sure. when you don't have the resources, that then a paper doll might be the only toy you get for Christmas. Well, they stay popular all the way through.
Wow.
When you think about the 40s and then in the 50s, you have McCall's magazine bringing out the very popular Betsy McCall paper doll. So a lot of these things you really do see have mm-hmm. their roots much earlier. Mm,
interesting. Very. Let's focus on the three decades which are featured in this exhibit. Let's start with the 1950s. And I think are these set up in a living room setting, each of these decades? Is that how it works?
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a living room for each one. So the 50s has something of a Western theme.
Okay.
Which probably shouldn't serve.
Hop
Along and Roy Rogers, et cetera. Yeah, and we have the toys to match.
Adam?
And, of course, this is a time once the Soviet Union, or then Russia, launched Sputnik. In 1957, that a lot of toys that had a science theme came out in the United States because Sputnik was a wake-up call for America, that we were very much behind the Russians in terms of science and technology, and we were very eager to educate our children to become scientists and engineers. And so all of these toys that have science themes start to come out. My favorite is the Alpha 1 ballistic missile. Came out in 1958.
Alpha 1 ballistic missile.
Came out in 1958.
Charming toy.
Was actually designed by a rocket scientist named Fred Burke. It was CO2 operated, so you didn't have to use flammable fuel.
Well, thank you for that.
You wouldn't blow yourself up. But these things would shoot 100, 200 feet into the air.
Whoa.
The biggest problem was you had to get out of the way when they came down.
I can hear my parents saying, don't play with that, it could put an eye out.
Exactly, right. Exactly. Right. They actually built it with a very hard rubber nose so that when it came back down to Earth, it wouldn't hurt you or the dog or the lawn.
Okay. Kate, some of these, let's just say from the 50s, some homegrown toys here, made in Minnesota or Wisconsin or in the upper Midwest, some of them.
Exactly. Probably the best known, Tonka.
Tonka toy,
I think most people have heard of them.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's an interesting company. Again, I think a lot of people know this story already, that they started out making metal lawn equipment and other things, but also had a couple of toys in their back pocket, and as we all know, it was the toys that took over and became the really important. So from Mound Metalcraft became Tonka Toys.
Beautifully made, too. They seem to me very realistic, real rubber tires with the big treads.
You know, I think that's something that we see over and over again with these early toys. The things that have really gotten me, the Tonka Toys are beautiful. The Revell kits are gorgeous, too. Mm. And people probably remember those. Mm. Beautifully, very well-crafted plastic, put-together cars, trains, what else? Good airplanes, stuff. Everything. And, they were designed with an eye toward quality and really designed with the real figure in mind.
Wonderful.
They're beautiful.
How about Cootie? Was that a locally developed product?
Well, you know it, Shopper Manufacturing Company. So Herb Shopper was a man who actually did a number of jobs, but what he liked to do in his spare time was whittle. And he used to make small...
Sitting there on the porch with my knife,
I think that's absolutely true. So he would whittle these small toys and give them away to the kids in the grocery store where he worked. And then he, hit on this great idea. Well, why not take this toy, take these little cootie bugs that he was making, and he called it cootie based on cooties, the World War I term that World War I soldiers called bed bugs, cooties.
That's what a cootie
yes.
was.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Bed bugs.
Exactly. So he's hooked the kids in right away because
right.
he's got this creepy little
bug.
Exactly. And he manufactured a small supply. They were sold on consignment at Dayton's. They sold out immediately. And the rest, as you know, is history.
Yeah. Mr. Potato Head, Adam, was that maybe not a homegrown product, but it was a big deal, wasn't it, in the 50s?
Very much so. Yeah. And, of course, that went through quite a transformation. Originally, it was just the plastic parts or accoutrements to add on to. You were supposed to use a real potato in the 1950s.
Really?
It isn't until the late 50s and early 60s that they begin to transcend into using a plastic potato body. So one of the problems they actually had with the early Mr. Potato Head is the parts that you had to stick into the potato were very sharp. So they were dangerous. I'm sure that the consumer product folks would not allow that now. So that came later into the late 50s and early 60s, but that was an extremely popular
toy.
How
did some of us survive those eras?
It is amazing.
Lead in the pencils, all that stuff. I mean, lead in the paint on the pencils, all that stuff.
Everything.
No seat belts.
I have to tell you, too, one of my favorite things about Mr. Potato Head, not only were those the little plastic parts sold to be stuck into the potato or the onion or whatever you had around, but then there was also a little-known set called Fruity Friends where you'd get the parts that would get stuck into the fruit. So you can imagine how much parents love that, having bits of food strewn around the house.
Or I can see a housewife who just the day before went grocery shopping and... Where are my potatoes? Where's the fruit? The kids were jamming legs and arms into.
Exactly.
This is too much fun. Let's do a trivia quiz here. Compliments of the Minnesota Historical Society, the History Center. Not even you two, who are with that fine organization, know about it. Question number one. Probably no fair. Maybe, Kyle, you're going to be the guy here. Question number one, trivia quiz on toys. What walks downstairs alone or in pairs? Toy that walks, quote-unquote, walks downstairs. And this is way
this
before
your
time.
This was the advertising tag for it. Yeah.
Well, let's see. The only thing that I can think of that walks downstairs is a Slinky.
Boy!
Wow.
A child of the 90s. What do you have, Adam? Do you have a prize for the guy? Give him a GI. No, you gave away all your GI Joes.
We'll give him a membership to the Historical Society.
Hey, now that is
a
good
gift.
That
would be pretty
good. He'll take it, too.
Who wouldn't?
All right, Kyle, excellent. Question number two, Smarty Pants. In 1964, Tonka launched its Mighty, as capital M, Mighty line of bigger, beefier toys. What was the first Mighty truck offered? What kind of truck?
Was it a dump truck?
Oh, man.
Whoa.
Did you look at this list before?
I have not.
You are so... You're way too smart, Kyle. I knew you're bright, but wow, this is crazy. I love it. Folks, this is not a setup. This is not rigged. This is not like the old $64,000 question, no. All right, question number three and final. Boy, you got a no-hitter going here. Kyle, in the 19... we might get you on this one. In the 1958 novelty hit, The Chipmunk Song, what toy does Elvin repeatedly ask for?
Ooh.
Elvin! Elvin! He sings about a toy.
Was it a hula hoop? Come on,
ladies,
they still play that song every
Christmas.
Ladies,
we played it, haven't we, on the All Request Show.
So, yeah.
Well, this guy's a 100%er.
Congratulations.
Kyle, we're very much impressed. We're always impressed with you, but that was really a tour de force where it comes to, boy. Adam, are we impressed?
I'm very impressed.
Wow, that's great.
And Adam's going to make good on the membership.
Absolutely. Membership. Don't keep in your memory. Maybe a membership is coming your way, Kyle, huh?
Oh, I'll definitely remember that.
It's a great place. You talk about it. It's a great big toy factory. That History Center is a wonder. It's toys for adults, I think. It's a candy store for adults. History is fun the way you folks do it down there.
Well,
it actually is.
We have a couple of great weekends of events related to the Prohibition exhibit coming up, including some good beer tastings and some other things. So if we can get that membership off to you quickly enough,
Get into some suds there. You are old enough, I think, aren't you?
I know that. I'll just make sure that I have a driver for me.
Right. Good idea. A sober cab there. No, not that you're going to do anything nasty. It is 12:38. Kyle, what do you say we take another break right here? We'll get back to our friends from the History Center, Kate Roberts and Adam Scherer, talking about toys of the 50s, 60s, 70s, even before and even after. We're having fun. Stay with us. At the Stan Turner Show, we love good stories, and there's no better place to find them than Valley Bookseller in downtown Stillwater. Valley Bookseller is an independent bookstore with knowledgeable and friendly staff who love books. Tell them what you like to read, and they'll make terrific recommendations just for you. Also, discover one of the finest children's collections in the entire Twin Cities. Valley Bookseller. Great books, great people. 217 North Main in Stillwater. Online at valleybookseller.com.
At Jaime's Haberdashery, men never sacrifice fashion for weather. So no matter how cold it gets, you can still spot a Jaime's man by his impeccable taste and the confidence that only comes from a hot lather shave. Jaime's Haberdashery helps men look and feel their best with high-quality clothing cut and styled just for them. Create a look that's uniquely yours with tailored suits, overcoats, hats, and accessories that make winter blush and at prices that won't melt your wallet. Jaime's Haberdashery, 400 St. Peter Street in downtown St. Paul. Online at Jaime's.com.
Did you know we had fingerprints before we were even born?
We did?
Yep, when we were only 9 weeks old.
My mom says our hearts were beating too.
Well, my mom says I could suck my thumb and smile before I was even born.
You still do. You don't have to tell.
Hello, my name is Marianne Koharski, and I'm the director of Pro-Life Across America, the Billboard People. If you know someone who is pregnant or in need of information and alternatives, including adoption, or would like to support the work of Pro-Life Across America, please call 1-800-366-7773 or visit our website at prolifeacrossamerica.org. Pro-Life Across America, non-political and totally educational.
A baby's heart is beating 18 days from conception.
Home and Garden Show, Rutherford Elementary School. Now, where is Rutherford Elementary School? If you're coming out of downtown Stillwater, just head up the hill on Maple on Myrtle Street and just keep going up the hill and look off to your left. That's where you'll find Rutherford Elementary School. Or else, if you're coming off Highway 36, it's on Manning Avenue, just about a quarter of a mile to the east of Manning Avenue, coming off Manning Avenue. You'll see it out there. We're here until 3 o'clock this afternoon. We're joined now by Sachin Gore of Mathnasium in Oak Park Heights. And hi, Sachin.
Hi there. It's a pleasure to be with you today with your listeners.
Well, what is Mathnasium?
So we are a learning center that helps students in 1st through 12th grade become great at math.
So it's a tutoring service?
Yes.
And do you go into homes, or do people come out to your place?
They come out to our place. We have a space that's really meant to inspire kids, to help them overcome any frustrations they might have, and be great at math.
Oh, a lot of kids have frustrations with math. Where does that begin?
Sometimes it's just the way different people think about math. People have different learning styles, so some need to see things visually or to use manipulatives, like when we make change, we use real coins. And
I use my fingers and toes. What are you doing here at the Home and Garden Show?
So part of what we're doing is we're just sponsoring kids' activities. We've got a big chess set, and we've got games where we get kids to do math, and they don't even realize that they're learning. They're just having fun.
What age groups do you work with at Mathnasium?
We work 1st through 12th grade, so kind of 7 through 17.
So you really want to get the young ones, though, first.
The earlier we get them, the more we can get that solid foundation and not have to go back and relearn some things.
Sachin Gore from Mathnasium, the Math Learning Center, located in Oak Park Heights on Neal Avenue, adjacent to Kowalski's. We're here until 3 at the Stillwater Home and Garden Show with Club 1220 KLBB.
We are back. We're knee-deep, I'd say ear-deep, in toys right now. We are having a blast this noon hour, talking about a forthcoming exhibit at the Minnesota History Center in St. Paul. You know, 345 Kellogg Avenue, just below the hill there, with the Cathedral of St. Paul looming above. You can't miss the place. It's a beautiful place, the History Center. And the exhibit, opening in May, we'll give you the dates a little bit later here again. Toys of the 50s, 60s, 70s. Really the stories, the artifacts of our lives. When we were little people, young people, and some of us never grew up, and we've kept them around. Our friends Kate Roberts and Adam Scher of the History Center are with us, and we're kind of walking our listeners, Kate and Adam, through the exhibits right now. The opening date, by the way, again, for the exhibit?
May 24th.
Okay.
So that's right. Memorial Day weekend.
Right. This is a heads-up show for you, and both of you have graciously consented to come back maybe the week before, the Saturday before the exhibit opens, and we'll take calls from our listeners. I know a lot of them are dying to get through here and tell us about their favorite toys and maybe have some questions about what they'll see, okay, in the exhibit. Let's go. We did the 50s. How about 1960s toys that'll be on display in your living room, kind of a big dollhouse setting you have down there?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, of course, you know, the 1960s, you're going to see Barbies, you're going to see G.I. Joes, but let me sort of spark some memories and throw out Mousetrap. Does anybody remember Mousetrap?
Do you know anything about Mousetrap,
all right,
Kyle?
We have.
I do remember Mousetrap. I don't think I ever played it, though.
Okay.
All right.
So.
Well, you're in. Oh, we got. We got a couple other people.
I think Tom Shue knows, and those smarty guys out there, they know everything, don't they? Well, what Mousetrap?
Well, what's fun about Mousetrap, and for people who remember it, you remember it well, it was based on Rube Goldberg cartoons. So it's one of these machines. Yeah, one of these wacky machines that it takes a million steps to do a very simple process, which is catch the mouse in the trap. But what I think is fun about this game, and which is, we were talking about this a little bit earlier, kids do what they want to do with the toy. And how many of us really know or ever played that game according to the rules? Were there rules? Was there a game? It was just so fun to put it together and to see it work. So I think that that's, you know, that's one of those touchstones for me, a person who was growing up in the 60s.
All right, Adam, what about what else in the 1960s will we see?
Well, when we think about the 1960s, a lot of people think about the counterculture, how culture began to change dramatically from suburbia in the 1950s to free love in the 1960s. And I think we've got a couple of toys that come to mind that really express that change in the culture. One is Twister, which has a Minnesota connection, if people don't know about that.
No,
it started out as, it was originally called King's Footsie.
King's Footsie?
King's Footsie.
Oh, come on.
It was developed by a St. Paul-based advertising executive named Rain Geiner. And he was actually working on a back-to-school shoe promotional display and had these small feet cutouts. Then he realized this could be an interesting game. So he enlisted the help of a couple of game designers, Chuck Foley and Neil Rabins. And the game eventually became known as Pretzel. Not a very great name either. But it was a great idea. So they took it to Milton Bradley. They loved the game. They didn't like the name. They changed it to Twister. But what was important about the game was this is really the first game where it was legitimate for people of the opposite sex to be in close contact with each other in a game. So it really did break a lot of cultural molds. The other toy that comes to mind for me that's representative of the counterculture is Rat Fink. I don't know how many people remember that.
I don't.
This was a character that was designed by Ed Roth, Ed Big Daddy Roth, who was a West Coast illustrator and a designer of hot rods. And his idea was to create an alter ego, if you will, to Mickey Mouse. So this has big bloodshot eyes, gnarly teeth, just a gruesome-looking little character. He was really the anti-Mickey of his era. So this is really representative of a time where molds are being broken and became a very popular toy. This is like one of the toys that parents didn't want you to have.
Kate, why do I want Rat Fink? Why?
You want Rat Fink. I mean, Adam hit on it. You want it because your parents don't want to have
it. That's exactly right.
And also because the guy who invented it, I mean, don't you want a toy made by a guy named Ed Big Daddy Roth?
Anything with Big Daddy on it.
Anything with Big Daddy in there. Now, what's interesting about Revell, the Rat Fink kits were made by Revell, the people who had made the respectable car kits in the 50s, got into this car culture in the 60s with Ed Big Daddy Roth. And as I understand it, things went well for a while until he started running with motorcycle gangs and became a less than savory character to start promoting in the ads. And then the whole Rat Fink thing kind of went underground with Revell.
Well, I've been educated in Rat Fink. Somehow that one blew by me. Just briefly again, from the 60s, Easy Bake Oven, that was a big deal, wasn't it, huh?
It sure was. Came out in 1964.
Yep.
Wasn't the first miniature oven. There were actually companies that were making real ovens for kids that were not obviously very safe. This was much safer, illuminated by a couple of incandescent light bulbs. The great thing about the Easy Bake Oven was that, you know, you had so many things that you were able to make with it. Started off strictly making confections, cookies, cakes, candies of all that kind. Then in the mid to late 60s, they started to come out with these little TV dinners. So you could have beef macaroni and tomato sauce. And I remember making
Eureka.
That, actually.
Did you?
I was one of the few boys that actually made things with an Easy Bake Oven.
Okay, Adam, I'm going to write that down. Okay. It's great. The 60s, before we leave it behind, let's see, what else did we have? Well, you mentioned Barbies and then Ken and Barbie. That was a big deal in the 60s. I think most of the ladies listening right now still have theirs, don't they, in a box somewhere?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And, okay, how about the 70s now? When we walk into the 1970s, Toyland, living room, what are we going to see?
Well, we're going to see a lot of different things. One of my favorite toys from the 70s, and, you know, it might be a toy, it might not be, but we talked earlier about these science kits.
Yes.
Well, in the 70s, there's an environmental kit that comes out. Johnny Horizon was a character, sort of a Smokey Bear character, that was created by the United States as a way of...
By the government?
By the government mm-hmm. as a way of promoting environmentalism. So the 1970s spin on these science kits is this thing where you can go out and test the pH balance in water, you can go out and test the air quality in your... Yeah.
Kyle, we couldn't wait to do that, could we?
Huh? Oh, yeah, that sounds just a load of fun.
But you talk about a toy reflecting its culture, and I don't think there's a better example than that
for
one.
Sure.
Yeah, the other one, of course,
did
that
they
comes
sell
up,
two or three of them?
I think they did.
Did they? Okay.
And
right.
you know, this will shock you. Yep. This will shock you, Kyle, but we found one mint in box available at a very reasonable price.
Wow. Oh, really?
For
wow.
the exhibit.
Wow, right. Untouched by human hands.
Untouched by human hands. More
water that okay. people would be dying to dig into.
What's this deal with hungry, hungry hippos? Toyland of the 70s, Adam. What's that?
Well,
this isn't Big Daddy again, is
yeah,
it?
Yeah, no, it's much more sedate than that, I think. He's a much more conventional character. It's an opportunity to take a really playful type of cartoonish type character and make it into a game that actually could get pretty aggressive.
Really?
Yes.
We're not talking violence here, are we?
Probably not violent, okay. but a lot of animated fun.
That's a lovely euphemism you came up with there. Okay. Hungry, hungry hippos. Legos, Star Wars, we talked about action figures. Let's see, Playzone. What about that from the 70s?
Well, what's interesting in the 70s, what we're going to do in the exhibit is have a 5-foot dollhouse that people can get into. And I want to talk a little bit about the exhibit for a second, because we're talking about all the toys that will be there for people to look at mm-hmm. and talk about. But there are, of course, also things to do. So in the 70s, there's a play zone that's a big dollhouse, as I mentioned. In the 60s, it's Barrel of Monkeys. And you can try your hand with giant Barrel of Monkeys. In the 50s, going back to Slinky, for everyone who was frustrated because they could never get that Slinky to work yep. going down the stairs, yep. we've measured the stairs to guarantee success.
The fix is in,
I'm just out there with this. We're going to make it easy for you.
We don't want to frustrate exactly. our museum visitors, do we?
And then in the garage area
okay,
in the exhibit.
Now this is a separate area, garage.
The garage okay. is where the Nerf balls will be. So imagine letting off a little steam in the exhibit by tossing Nerf balls at some targets that we'll have for you, mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. one might slip by and,
right.
you know.
Can we throw one at Adam? Would that be all right?
Adam
they
will
can't
be
hurt
there.
You too much.
Adam
he won't
will
be, oh, he won't
in
be
the garage okay. most days, I think,
okay.
available.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Now, here's a, speaking of potentially problematic toys, how about something called Kent Classic Lawn Darts? I guess we knew them as Jarts with a J. Sounds kind of a keep-your-head-down kind of toy. Well, tell us, refresh us, Adam,
yes,
on that one.
Yes, one of the stories that we collected associated with this has the title of My Parents Always Told Me to Stand Back. So that tells you just about everything you need to know about Jarts. You know, the object of the game is simple enough, was to throw these lawn darts into a circle. It's sort of like horseshoes. But these are... very large.
They're about a foot long, weren't they?
They're very large yeah. darts with very sharp points, and they were very dangerous toys, actually.
I must confess that a friend of mine on the St. Paul newspaper, he and I, one afternoon, after having a lot of lemonade, we went out and played lawn darts, and it potentially could have been a very dangerous and disastrous thing. But we lived. We survived.
Well, they, you know, and it's funny, too, because they had their critics, of course, people who said that they should be banned from the very start. Yeah. And because they had their very sharp tips were very heavy metal, too. So
sure.
that made
oh,
things
yes.
even worse. But then, you know, they also had their defenders who said, you know, who in their right mind would give that thing to a kid? This isn't a toy for adults, and it needs to be regulated. Nevertheless, in 1988, they were banned.
They were banned. Took a while after how many dented
while.
Skulls,
yeah.
I wonder. Also out in the garage, as we call it, at the forthcoming exhibit at the History Center called Toys of the 50s, 60s, and 70s, there'd be something, well, the big wheels, Adam, and bicycles will be out there in the garage, too.
Yeah, the big wheel came out in 1969. This was sort of like a kid's ability to be like the main characters in Easy Rider. you know, they were intentionally constructed to be more or less very aerodynamic. They're very low to the ground. You have a very big wheel in the front, small wheels in the back. You know, the really important thing was to be able to lock your wheels so that you could do these 180 or 360 spins. And they also had a certain type of molding on the front wheel that when you rode this down on a gravel road, made a very loud clapping sound so that people knew you were coming. They knew that the big wheel was on its way.
So little Hell's Angels coming down the street.
They were also absolutely terrible if you were on any kind of decline.
Oh.
Because you just started going faster than your legs could move.
They forgot to put a brake on it.
A little bit, yeah.
Well, we'll have big wheels and bicycles at a safe distance. And there are hands-on, Kate, there are hands-on displays here, right?
All the way through, all the way through.
Tell us about some of them. We can come to grips literally with what?
Well, I do think that probably, you know, probably for my money, the best one probably will be that Slinky Stairs. Mm-hmm. But I also do want to call attention to the Nerf Room, because the Nerf...
The Nerf Room.
Because I think, how often do you get to come to a museum and throw things? Let's face it.
Not often enough.
Not that we want to set a precedent.
We are a throwaway society. Why not throw some stuff at other people that won't hurt them, huh?
Yep.
Well, we just have a couple of minutes left. Adam Scher and Kate Roberts from the Minnesota History Center. Some final thoughts, please.
Well, I think, let me just remind you of the dates. Opens Memorial Day weekend, May 24th. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, please come and check out our Prohibition exhibit.
Yes.
And the other exhibits that we have at the History Center. There are many, many others.
Tell us about those. Just a couple.
Well, we have, probably coming up in April, is one called Sights, Sounds, and Soul, which is photos of Minneapolis and St. Paul, done by an African-American photographer. Fascinating. And then we have continuing, of course, then Now Wow, Minnesota's Greatest Generation, our tried and true favorites as well.
Right. Adam, any final thoughts from you?
Well, also to keep in mind that there will be a book that will be coming out.
Who might have authored that book, Adam?
Well, strangely enough, Kate Roberts and Adam Scher.
The two people you're listening to right now.
So there will be a book that highlights 45 toys from these three decades that will be coming out about the same time as the exhibition. And we always have a lot of public programs in consort with our exhibits. So take a look at the website. Stay close to the radio and the television and learn more about those opportunities when the exhibit opens.
And Kate Roberts and Adam Scher, thank you for agreeing to come back. Come back maybe a week before the exhibit opens, and it opens again on May 24th. And we'll take calls from our listeners, and we'd love to hear their stories.
Can't wait.
It's going to be fun. We had fun this hour. Thank you both for coming down, slipping and sliding on the sidewalks. Please be careful out there, and we want to make sure everything goes smoothly for the forthcoming exhibit, Toys of the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Thank you so much again, everybody. Have a great weekend. Be careful out there. The side streets are still to be reckoned with, so keep yourself vertical as best you can and take it easy. Please join us Monday for the All Request and Dedication program here on 1220, Club 1220 KLBB. Yep. The Shoemeister and I will be with you come Monday. So have a great weekend, a great Sunday, and we'll catch you then. Stay warm. Bye-bye.